Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Hello, I'm Zeb and this is Vectis Movies. Tonight we'll be reviewing the gravity of the situation with First Man, Butterfly and Bad Times at the El Royale. We're floating through the screens in search of the best entertainment so that you don't have to. You're listening to Vectis Radio on 104.6 FM. You can also hear us on vectisradio.com as well as the TuneIn Radio app. Podcasts will be available on your preferred podcast source later this evening. Share your thoughts and keep up to date with the show on our Facebook page, Vectis Movies. And I'm currently joined by Sharon.
Hello.
Who seems a little weary from a long day.
A long day gardening. I'm one of the few people who actually looks forward to the clocks changing and having it getting dark at 3 o'clock. I like that time of year.
I think there's going to be a lot of people cursing you.
I know, they'll be thinking, what, are you mad? Yeah. But, you know, I work such long hours in the summer now that it's like, please be autumn and winter so that I can...
Yeah, but then you've got to sweep up all the leaves.
They started doing that, yes. It is. The work changes definitely this time of year. We stop doing the grass and the fighting the losing battle with weeds and we start gaining ground and you can then start shaping gardens a bit more, planning ahead.
I should imagine it smells a bit more though, doesn't it, with all the leaves?
It depends if you get cats suddenly using them sort of nice comfy toilet and suddenly you're sweeping up leaves and you go, what the hey? It's never pleasant.
No.
But no, you can't beat it really being outdoors.
That's good. And you can't beat being indoors either,
indoors,
at the cinema.
Watching movies.
Yeah. So
if I'm outdoors in the day, I'm indoors all the rest of the time.
Oh, sounds like a perfect balance, Sharon. So what have you seen this week?
I have seen First Man.
Okay. Can you give us a little summary?
Yes. It is basically the story of Neil Armstrong, who was the first man to walk on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
As I think nearly everyone should know that.
Even I know that one. I'm quite proud of that.
Yeah, that shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. And so what may come as a surprise, though, he was obviously famously very private. Of all the sort of astronauts who walked on the moon and who became like very famous, he is the one that sort of shied away from publicity and he didn't court publicity at all. I don't even know if he's still alive.
I'm not sure.
We'll do a bit of Googling and just get some facts on that one. But yeah, so basically the story is it starts off in his early career in 1960 when he is a test pilot for experimental aircraft. And before he's joined NASA, and unlike most of the NASA astronauts that we've come to know, he didn't enter NASA via the military route. Most NASA and most astronauts people tended to be ex-military or currently in the forces in America. But he came at it through civil engineering and aviation. So he was an aviation test pilot. And you see his journey then from being a test pilot, obviously taking huge risks, personal risks, testing the limits of your own endurance and your own ability to respond in a crisis, because often with experimental or testing planes, you test them because, you know, you don't know that everything works yet.
Yeah.
And so you just test to make sure that, you know, it does fly and it does respond to commands. So he's used to being at that sort of cutting edge of aviation. And so you follow his sort of journey, as it were, through both him joining the space program to him joining the Gemini project, which is the manned flights and looking at how the possibilities of what needs to happen to get a man on the moon, and then him actually going into the whole Apollo projects, which was the actual lead up to the moon landings.
So is this quite a sort of documentary type film, or
no,
does it lead away?
It's drama, but it's I don't know much about Neil Armstrong as a man.
Oh, I can confirm he died in 2012.
Oh, right. So quite recently, really, then, relatively speaking. So how old was he when he died, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, I'm not sure.
In his 80s, I would have thought.
Google isn't telling me. It's not telling me, Sharon.
Not to worry. Well, anyway, so we know that he's now deceased.
Yes.
So he... Yes, so it's done in a sort of... It's taking the facts of his life, but it's done... It's obviously acted by Ryan Gosling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through... And you see glimpses of his home life. Like, when before he joined the space programme, he had a little, he had two children. He had a little boy and a little girl. And his daughter suffered from childhood leukemia. And sadly, she died at the age of three. And in the film, they use this sort of tragedy as almost like a catalyst in his life when he sort of stops looking at his sort of civil engineering career and he looks at joining the space program to sort of taking a different step in a different direction. And throughout the film, it sort of does echo back. Do you see scenes at the beginning of the film with him with his daughter when she was sort of poorly? And then you see certain images recur throughout the film of where obviously it suggests that he's either thinking of his daughter or the loss of his daughter was a real catalyst for change for him. And then he has another son, and so by the time he's the Neil Armstrong astronaut walking on the moon, he's got two boys. Mm-hmm. You do see all the sort of scientific and all the adventure sort of some bits offset against like his domestic life, you know, that he is married, has been married to his wife for a long time, he has got two small children.
So it kind of sets up the amount he's got to lose, really, doesn't it?
Yes, and that is echoed throughout the film where there's the race, the sort of space race, and there's certainly the race to be the first person on the moon against the Americans and the Russians, excuse me. You see that it was a costly race, that there were accidents, fatal accidents, in every stage of the planning and the preparation, and several missions had loss of life. And so you see him adapting to basically the loss of life of his compatriots, people he'd trained with, people who would say that, you know, they talked about being the first man on the moon and discussing their ambitions. And then because of a failure of some or an error on someone's part, they've died, very sort of, and you see him sort of carrying the weight of this with him. But he was a very private man. So, but it does take you through this journey of him joining the space program, them testing the different flights, them testing the moon landings, and then testing the different rockets, going up into space and testing sort of different docking procedures, and then you actually see the moon landing. And it ends sort of just when they come back to Earth. That's where the film ends.
Okay. So, with these kind of films, there's not always a lot of scope, and people kind of think, oh, we're just going to make a film because there's not been a film yet. Did it feel like that, or did it feel like they kind of offered something new?
I think it was they tried to offer something new. I think they were trying to show us the man behind the legend, almost, because everybody's right. Or behind the history. And it worked to some degree, but also in some ways it wasn't as successful as they think it was. Because if they're trying to show us who the real Neil Armstrong was, through the film you get to see that he was very private and that he kept his grief to himself about his daughter, and the loss of his friends he very much kept to himself. This is a man who didn't wear his emotions on his sleeve, and if you pushed him and asked him, he just wouldn't tell you. He would, when someone said to him, how do you think the death of your daughter will affect your mission, and he said, I think it'd be unreasonable to expect that it wouldn't affect me in my forthcoming mission. But is there a question there? And so he sort of shuts down any talk about things. And one of the astronauts was saying, oh, my wife has asked me to take something to the moon with her, so she gets bragging rights that, hey, I've got, you know, this thing of mine has been to the moon. And one of them asked, Neil, what are you taking to the moon? He said, well, I'd like to take more fuel. He doesn't engage at all. He doesn't give anything away. He's very much a private man. And I think at the end of the film, I didn't really feel that I knew him any better than I did before. Right. So I knew very little about Neil Armstrong other than he was the first man on the moon before I saw the film. And I came away knowing that he had children and he'd lost a child and that he was married. But apart from that, I knew little more about him. So as if sort of like to open up him to a wider audience, I think he's probably just as much a mystery as he ever was.
So it's kind of like opening the door, but just by cracking it open.
Yes, and I think as he was such a private man, I don't think we'll ever know what he was really like, what he really thought. I don't know if he wrote a biography or if he wrote about his experiences, but if he didn't, then I think those secrets went with him, because I don't think he was someone who you could look at and go, oh yeah, that's what he was thinking, because that was not the man we saw. And that was not the story they told, that he was someone that you could look at or read anything into their life. So yeah, he's obviously very fiercely intelligent and dedicated to what he was doing. but very much someone that you probably would struggle to get to know.
Okay, and there's a strong family element, yes. I think, that comes across, especially in the trailer, you kind of see it. But is there much else? You know, is there much about his belief?
No.
So, see, that seems strange to me, that they would go through the effort.
Yeah, where they ask him, at one point they ask him, why do you want to go to the moon? And he doesn't really answer. And I don't think they really have an answer what really motivated him to go. There's a couple of scenes that again hark back to the sort of the loss of his daughter. And you think, are they... But it felt like they were reading something in that may not have been there.
Kind of offering these different ideas because they didn't actually know.
They didn't actually know. And I think, yeah, you still... At the end of it, I'm thinking, there was one act that was quite symbolic. And I was thinking, what is that symbolic of? I was trying to analyse the sort of the symbolism in the film. And I'm thinking, this felt like it was something that they wanted to happen rather than something that actually did happen. So it'll be interesting to read a bit more about him, I think, and to find out how much of this is actually inspired by the man or inspired by what people want him to be rather than who he actually was.
How many big characters are in this film? Because obviously you've got the man himself.
Yeah, you've got Neil Armstrong, you've got his wife. She's up there with him, played by Claire Foy. A lot of people know from The Crown, and I remember her years ago from Little Dorrit. but she's coming out soon in the latest Girl with a Dragon Tattoo installment, The Girl in the Spider's Web. So she's sort of a big name at the moment, but she plays his wife. And then apart from the two leads, all the other people are people you'd recognise their faces for, but you probably wouldn't know their names.
Right.
But you do get to see the other moon landing pilots. You get to meet Buzz Aldrin, but again, their relationship is not really developed. They meet each other a few times, and you get the feeling they were such opposites in terms of their characters that they didn't really get along. And you meet Michael Collins, who was the man who was the pilot but didn't land on the moon. But again, they only refer to him as Michael, or as Mike. And so I was thinking, well, you must be Michael Collins, but they never say, hey, this is your pilot, Michael Collins. They don't name anyone. And some of the characters are like saying, oh, hey, Dan. And that's it. You just have to think, Dan? And in your head, you're thinking, how many astronauts do I remember from my science days called Dan? And then you read the credits afterwards, you go, oh, that's who that was. And some of the names won't be everyday names, but if you know your space exploration and the sort of history
good
of space
for the space
travel,
people.
They might get them. But yeah, there was no introductions, no explanations about who people were. You basically were given their first names and they just sort of slotted in.
Yeah, and it sounds strange because maybe it was done partially because they knew he liked his privacy and they wanted to kind of keep that real. But at the same time, why do you go to the effort to make a film and not really?
Yeah, I didn't really feel that I knew a lot more about him by the end of it. You do see him have like a couple of close friends. There's sort of two guys who are in the space program with him. So you see those friendships develop.
Is there the right chemistry, though, do you think?
Well, again, he's obviously... I think they must have studied what footage there was of Neil Armstrong. But he doesn't give a lot away. He is that quiet man in the corner that notices everything, observes everything, may sort of join in, but you know that everything is going on inside his head. He doesn't show the world what he's thinking and what he's feeling.
Is there any archive footage in this one? You're sort of talking about looking at footage.
No, it was all filmed for this film. The only thing I think might have been genuine was some of the recordings of the actual moon landing.
Right.
I think some of that sounded to me like the vintage footage rather than the actor speaking, because I suddenly thought that sounds slightly different in the inflection on one of the voices. And I think that might have been the real recordings.
Okay.
So that was interesting. But it was certainly an interesting film, though it was hard to be sort of emotionally engaged in it. And I did... Yeah, I thought the characters all played very well, but because it just felt like you were scratching the surface of a really intriguing man, but that we'll never know who he really was. So for that reason, I'd probably give it a 3. I'd say there's enough there to keep you interested, certainly good performances all round, and certainly enough for you to go, I want to know more, which I think sometimes that's what you want from a film, isn't it? To say, I'm going to show you a bit, now you go and find out more about this. So it made me, it kept me involved. It was, well, you can't say there's any high points or low points. It was sort of a steady progress through the film. There was tension in it because people would strap to a rocket and then they set fire to it. There's an element of danger and tension there. But most of it, because it's all historical truth. If you know your space program, there aren't going to be any surprises. But no, I thought it was an entertaining film in a quiet, low-key sort of way. It was a very sort of low-key performances, a low-key film altogether. But it was, yeah, it was okay for that. So I'll definitely give it a 3.
Okay, and before we go to the break, the audience for this, would you say it's kind of a general thing or for those sort of space lovers, people wanting
well,
to
look
know?
Last night there was a mixed. I went to see it last night. There was a mixed bunch of sort of men, women, different ages. So, but I don't think people knew what to make of it really.
Right.
But I think to me, it's aimed at that sort of middle brow. So it's not high brow. So it's not about all about the technicalities. It's not all about how the science of how they got to the moon. This is about people. But it's not about thrills and spills and adventure. So it's not like lowbrow, as it were, to sort of, you know, be judgmental about these things. But I would say it's middle brow. So you have to have some sort of interest in the topic, I think, to go and watch it. But you don't have to have an understanding of the history of sort of the space race to get it. But it's a basically, it's a, like this sort of drama about this one man and his journey from ordinary to your life to being the first man on the moon.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, so we'll be right back after the break.
Vectors Radio. 104.6. The heart of the island's community.
Red Squirrel Property Shop are an independent, family-run local business that's honest, trustworthy and reliable. Isn't that exactly what you need when renting out your home? Honesty. At Red Squirrel Property Shop, we help rent out and manage properties all over the island. We can offer you various services from guaranteed rent on time, fully managed and tenant introduction. We are there to help take away the stress from renting out your home. Call us today to have the life of a stress-free landlord on 01983 521 212.
Immerse yourself in the nostalgia of how railways used to be at the Isle of Wight Steam Railway. Our genuine island locomotives and carriages date back to Victorian times and are immaculately restored to pristine condition. The one-hour train ride takes you through unspoiled countryside and woodland. So come and enjoy a journey with a difference at the Isle of Wight Steam Railway. For further details, visit iwsteamrailway.co.uk.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, has a limited number of advertising spots available. Give your business the boost it needs and reach across the island. Email our team today, marketing@vectisradio.fm.
Welcome back to Vectis Movie. So it's still Sharon and I in the studio here.
Hello. And okay. Next
we're going to be talking about our TV instalment, Butterfly. And Sharon, you've not heard anything about
this
one, have you?
I don't know anything about Butterfly. So I'm going to be... Well, I'm completely ignorant, so please tell me, Seb, what is Butterfly and what's it about?
Okay, so Butterfly, it's a brand new ITV drama. It's only in 3 parts. The first one came out this Sunday, so it'll be on their ITV player.
Yeah.
And it's about a family with a transgender child. And so their child that was assigned male at birth has come out and said, I want to be a girl.
Okay.
And it's kind of about them coming to terms with it and the relationships, the dynamics of the relationships of the family anyway. The family were quite separated, so the dad had left the mum, and the mum was kind of struggling, I think, a little bit on her own anyway. There's an older sister and then the child. And so this child goes through the struggles of kind of getting along with the family anyway and finding things hard. And then...
How old is the child at this point in the drama?
See, I'm not sure. I think they've just started high school. So
okay,
I would
so
say around 11, 11, 12.
Right.
I could be wrong on that.
No, but that sort of age where they're sort of coming before adolescence there.
Yeah, and so this is a big thing in this drama, the fact that this child has just kind of reached puberty, so isn't sort of fully developed, and so the family are kind of thinking, well, is this the right thing to do? Do they really know? And then the child herself is kind of not really having a voice. Because of her age,
yeah,
and people not listening to her, and it's how are her family going to deal with it? And it talks a lot about the mental problems of not only her but her family.
Okay,
and
adapting at school, I'd imagine.
Yes,
so
and
this
that
is
comes
a,
in.
So is someone who identifies as female, so they're living their life as a female at this point, are they?
So you come into it, and at home, she's been presenting as female.
She's always been female.
And then outside of the house, she's having to present as male.
Okay.
And a lot of this came down to her father's response.
Yeah.
And how unhappy he was with the idea, and he got very angry about it. So they said, look, you know, if you want to experiment, do it at home. You're not doing it outside. And so for a while, this was okay because she could kind of explore and wear what she wanted to wear. And in that process, she kind of found what made her happy.
Yeah, so you know where you... It's about identity, you know, feeling that where you are, isn't it? Your identity and your place within your family and within society.
Yes, exactly. And so it's her struggling with herself and trying to decide that this is right and having the voice to say this is right.
That this is not just about what the clothes I wear, this is what I am fundamentally.
But also how it almost throws a spanner in the works for the family. Because the father then wants to be about for her because he thinks that if he can be a role model and show her how to be a man, then she's like, just going to change her mind and everything's going to work out. Everything's all going to be happy.
Yeah.
So then you start to see the difference in the relationship between the parents and the way they're dealing with things. And you meet the grandparents and they're quite sort of old-fashioned views. And sort of how it affects not only the child but the older sister.
Yeah.
And then you get some really nice sort of touching scenes between the two girls. And the way they interact.
Yeah.
And then again, the development at school.
So at home, do they refer to this child as their daughter and their sister? Or is there sort of like confusion over sort of names and identity?
And it really covers that. There's a lot of confusion. So again, the father will not call her.
Or say my daughter, it'll be always my son or him.
So I think it's gone from Max to Maxine.
Okay.
And he will only say Max.
Okay.
And then the mother's kind of like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
You know, doesn't want to upset anyone, but she can't win because if she makes someone happy, she's going to upset someone else. And that's a really important thing I think a lot of these families must go through and the kind of the turbulence and the different views. And ultimately, I think it's kind of that thing that you need to step back and you need to look at your child and are they happy the way they were? Are they happy the way they are now? And
is it something that you think? Yeah, it's identifying what's true, isn't it?
Mm.
To say that, because some people, I've heard some people say, oh, if they want to wear a dress, then wear a dress. Like, well, if it's about their identity, it's not about clothes.
No.
It's something, it's on a fundamental level, isn't it? It's like, this is who I am, and who I am is not what my body is.
Absolutely.
I'm something different than what my body is. And so it's like getting to that point where the child can say, this is not about clothes, this is not about my hair, this is not about these things, this is who I am. Mm. My body just doesn't reflect who I am. And sort of getting to that point where you're saying, yes, my body's wrong, but this is who I am. I am definitely...
Absolutely,
this child is definitely I'm a girl. And saying that, no, it's not just what I want to have pretty clothes, because, you know, go back 300 years, men dressed just as handsomely as women, and they could be just as flamboyant. Throughout history, you know, you've got dress changes, and what defined as being the masculine and what defined as feminine has changed throughout history.
Mm.
But this is about saying, like, no, this is not my outward appearance, this is who I am inside my own soul.
Yeah.
I believe that I'm female and this is how I want to be recognised as female.
Exactly, and I think that's important, and this drama kind of highlights that quite often in the media. Stories such as these are presented through the child was influenced by somebody else.
Or it's just about let them wear a dress if they want to wear a dress. It's like, it's not about their clothes.
Absolutely, and this show is very clever because it does not say she saw such and such doing this. And it's just the way she feels.
Yeah.
And that is so important.
Because that's not going to be influenced, is it? If you identify as one gender or another, that isn't going to be influenced by what anyone says.
Yeah.
It's what you feel in your innermost being.
Exactly. And I think quite often you still get this whole, oh, well, it's for attention. And
why would you do that for attention?
Exactly. And I think this show really highlights the trouble that people go through, the real difficult times. And you wouldn't choose that.
No.
If you could choose, you would not.
You would just
go
along
through that.
Yeah. Because I think I grew up in a time when there wasn't really any transgender people about, and if people were, it was a bit of, it was treated a bit like a joke. I mean, probably Shawnee's just joined us, so hello Shawnee.
Oh yeah, how are you?
But you'll remember that year in the 70s, like the Dick Emery show.
Oh yeah, Dick Emery.
And that's how most people thought transgender was. You probably won't remember it, but he had a lot of he was a man, a male comedian, but he dressed as a woman, and a lot of these were like quite grotesque, weren't they? Oh, you are awful,
they were, yeah.
But I like you. And that's what most people thought that transgender people were. It was just a bloke in a dress, because it had that sort of persona. It wasn't about gender identity the way we see it now.
And I think that's something the media are still kind of struggling with, because they're still saying, well, look at all these presentations we've had before. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? And now people are going, no.
No.
Well, no, it's this.
It's what you said about granddads earlier. I did it. It's granddads. And it is a generational thing. And a lot of things are generational things, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's how people have been brought up and they look at things. And I mean, I think it's very much like, you know, this Brexit thing with all the people that are like, oh, you know, they're all anti this and anti that, and people are really anti change or anything that's new or anything that, which is such a shame, because
yeah.
I mean, I'm an old geezer, but I just think, you know, it should be new all the time. It should be new. It should be new things. Should be advancing. Should be more accepting of people. And
I think it's always been there. I think it's just the way it's, because I do remember I went to school with a girl who I think probably was transgender, because they always dressed as a boy. They lived their whole life as if they were male, but they would never, it was never something that happened on the Isle of Wight. So this person lived, I think when you look at them now, you're thinking actually they probably were transgender. They probably would identify as male, because they lived their whole aspect of their life was masculine. They just happened to be in a female form. And I think if she lived today, I think, I don't know if she's still alive actually, but she'd be older than me, so she'd be in her 50s now, or even her early 60s. But I think if she was, you know, today, they would probably look at it and go, actually, we think you're probably a more presenting as a male, or identifying more as a male than you ever did as a female. You're just in a female form.
Yeah, there was a lot of, it's funny, just before I was listening to you guys, on the radio, but before 6 o'clock, I was listening on Radio 4, and they were bringing up about this, there was a politician talk, and he says that one of the problems was how, you know, like if they go into changing rooms, whatever, or if they...
That's always going to be an issue, isn't it?
That's sort of,
I think at the end of the day, if you are looking and making other people uncomfortable in a change room, it's not because you're transgender, it's because you're a creep.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, no, that's fair. All I'm saying is this is what this discussion was about, because they're saying that should be okay. And then there was this one guy saying, well, I've got nothing, I'm not prejudiced against anything at all and all that, but...
There's
always the buts, you know,
yeah.
And to me...
And I think that's it. And I think people just need to get over the word. At the end of the day, because it's just another person in a change room, isn't it? And it shouldn't matter what your mindset is or what your body looks like, because at the end of the day, they most likely want as much privacy as you.
Yeah, they're not going to want to be on display if they're private about things. Yeah,
absolutely.
But is that addressed in the film, in Butterfly? Does it, Dad? Because where this child goes to school as a male but lives as a female at home, is that obviously an issue at school where they obviously were going to feel deeply uncomfortable having to go in the boys' changing rooms and having to sort of change there?
I'm not sure, because we've only seen the first episode, and there's a kind of a toilet scene, and it's a very strange layout for a toilet. I've never seen it myself personally, but so on the one side you've got the female cubicles, and on the right side you've got the male cubicles, and then the sinks are down the middle.
That sounds similar to Sandown. Schools.
Oh, there you
go.
Sandown.
Okay. Not Sandown. Cows. I think Cows Enterprises.
Okay.
I've seen them, not there, but when I've been there and gone past, it's looked open plan. It has looked open plan.
I just thought that was a little bit strange anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. I don't think there's a problem. I've just not seen that layout. And I think that's quite good, actually, as a school kind of being progressive in that way. But the doors were still kind of gendered.
So I think they should just have... if it's going to be an issue, then they should just move towards having doors on...
Yeah,
the boys' toilets and doors on girls' toilets.
Yeah, that'll do.
Because I know, on a side note, I know when I was working in an office building, they used to laugh about some of the guys, because they would always use a cubicle to go to the toilet. They wouldn't. They didn't like using the urinals. And it's like, well, why would you want to do, if you're private and you don't want to be sort of, you know, on display, as it were, what's wrong with actually having a bit of privacy? For some people, it's not a problem. But for some people, if it is, then let them have privacy. It's a private moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's just put the doors on all the toilets. That's what I say.
Yeah, I think that'll solve a lot of issues, wouldn't it? There's this sort of small scene, and she's in the toilet and she's looking between the doors, and it's kind of that, well, which one do I go to? And then kind of the pressures of other people that are in the toilet, and she's got to think, right, well, I'm being made to present this way, I've got to follow that. And so it'll be interesting to see how that develops over. And I had put a message out on our Facebook page, Vectis Movies, and we have had a little bit of feedback. And Laura has said, it's great to see a factual drama based around trans kids, particularly at such a prevalent time. Although the actors portray very well the very real emotions and situations experienced by such families, we must remember that lots of information is squeezed into such a short series. And as a drama, opposed to a documentary, it has artistic license. Overall, well done, ITV. And I think she's absolutely right. And I think it is important to remember it is a drama rather than documentary. And I think, from what I do know about the process and a lot of struggles people I know have had with, say, the NHS, is that while in this show, I think I've read somewhere that the child had to wait 5 months to be seen by the NHS. Okay. In reality, the waiting times, I think, currently are between a year and a year and a half. So that is a bit of a drastic change.
That's quite a long time.
In time.
Yeah.
So I can understand they might be doing it to kind of encourage people to get on and sign up and make them feel better. But at the same time, it's not very realistic. And not only is it going to annoy people that don't agree with transgender people and saying, oh, well, everything gets really rushed and all this, and it doesn't.
Well,
it's
like, I don't think no one's going to do something like that on a whim, are they?
No.
But time gives people enough to think, yeah, you've thought about every avenue about this, so...
But it's just such a shame that they felt they had to change those waiting times. I don't know if it was sort of an oversight.
Just to move the drama along.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. And so on the next two Sundays at 9 o'clock on ITV. And I have managed to get a leaflet here for Mermaids, and they are a transgender charity, so children can get in touch and they can network with other youth that identify as trans or non-binary, and it's also, there's also a group for parents and families of, so
yeah, because that's another side of the story
as well.
Yeah,
and sometimes actually that's the side that needs the more support.
Yeah,
and because I think some people,
they're like siblings, and
absolutely,
they're suddenly thinking, hey, I thought I had a little brother, but now I've got a sister.
And the grandparents are going,
whoa. And at the end of the day, if those people can be supportive, then ultimately that child is going to have a much happier life, aren't they?
And that's the important thing, I think.
And their reality.
So that website, because I think it's important that people know. And so if you want to get in contact with Mermaids, their website is www.mermaidsuk.org.uk.
And we'll put that up on the Facebook page.
Yes, we will put that up on the Facebook page because it is important. It's so nice to get a bit of diversity and a bit of representation, and especially on mainstream telly. And, you know, it's not this obscure channel.
Well, it's something that's been coming up in the news more and more frequently, hasn't it? The issue of trans kids.
Yes.
About how society has to learn, basically, to recognise that this is not a phenomenon that, you know, middle-aged men go through. Because that's what most people think trans people are. That it's sort of middle-aged men who suddenly want to wear... have long nails, and again, it's down to comedy, like the little League of Gentlemen, is it?
Oh yeah,
they had the taxi driver, wasn't it?
Yes.
This big
so
bruiser.
there's been some interesting representation, so it's nice to see something a bit more honest, a bit more realistic. And so I'm quite torn with a rating for this show, because...
Well, it's still to play for, isn't it?
Yeah, there's still a lot to go. So we'll possibly give it a quick mention on the Sunday after next. But I think at the minute I'd probably give it about 3.5.
Okay, right. So it's got promise then.
So it is promising, and I'm really happy that it's there for people, and people do need it. And I just feel it's got a little bit to go. I feel there's a little bit more to give.
Yeah, it a bit more to explore.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to see something a little bit more positive as well. Because, of course, I can't imagine that for everybody it's a completely negative thing.
No.
And so it would be nice to meet some more positive characters in this story, I think. But we shall hold out our hope.
All right, so we'll wait and see. But it's certainly one to check out, I think.
Mm.
So I knew nothing about that, so I will go and check that out.
Yes. Yeah, Sunday, 9 o'clock, ITV.
Or so, on a catch-up
or
service.
Or on catch-up, yes.
So Doctor Who, eh, first?
Well, yes, yes. So Doctor Who first, so that's at, what, 6:55, 7 yeah. o'clock, something Sunday. Like that. Sunday. And then Butterfly.
No,
all right.
There you go. So that's Sunday sorted.
Yeah, that's evening telly. All right, we'll be right back after the break.
Factis Radio, FM 104.6. For the people, by the people.
Something's brewing on the Isle of Wight. E.ON have teamed up with the Footprint Trust to warm up homes across the island. You could get a brand new boiler for only £240 and free cavity wall insulation. We're also holding Cozy Isle Socials, free events where you can learn top energy-saving tips and enjoy plenty of tea and cake. Want to see if you could save up to £2,000 on a new boiler? Call E.ON today on 0333 202 4533. Terms and eligibility criteria apply.
The White Military and Heritage Museum in Northwood. The museum will excite your senses and immerse you in a world of human success over adversity. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Vectis Radio has won a bronze in the annual UK Community Radio Awards. To put it into context, there were over 360 entries from over 70 stations from every corner of the UK. Vectis Radio has won a bronze in the UK Community Radio Project category, which helps young people boost their confidence and communication skills using the main ingredients of radio. If you would like to know more about the 4P's Training School course, please get in touch with me. You can email ian.mac@vectisradio.fm or check out the website www.4ps.org.uk.
People have been asking about Hair Bear's all-new record fair.
Can I get an update on my stocks and shares?
No, it's all about the music.
Can I find out when to plant my seedlings?
No, it's all about the music.
Can I hear a debate about the state of the economy in Venezuela?
No, it's all about the music.
Can I hear the best music of the last 50 years and a 3-hour selection of classic tracks?
No, it's... Yeah, actually, yes you can, that's what it's all about. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 7 to 10pm, Vectis Radio 104.6 FM for Hair Bear's Record Fair. It's all about the music.
The average radio station has 500 tracks on a rolling playlist. We have over 5,000. This is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Welcome back to Vectis Movies. So we've now got the lovely Brian in the studio. He'll be on the show next. Oh, it's so great to have you back. And we've got Sean, who arrived a little while ago. Yeah. But Sean, you've been on some adventures, haven't you?
I did, yeah. This weekend, I went to, it's called the Widescreen Weekend, which is in the Science Museum in Bradford. And it is... I went to the celluloid Saturday. I couldn't do the whole weekend, but on Saturday they just show celluloid, so 70mm, 35, you know, no digital productions, that's all on another week. And I saw a Cinerama film, which Cinerama was this proper old cinema, which I'm sure Brian had seen as well at some time.
I saw one particular film I think you're going to mention in a moment, Sean.
Yeah, yeah, How the West Was Won.
Incredible film.
Yeah, it was. And in Cinerama, it was this... three camera process where so you had to have three projectors to show the film, so it would have been really difficult to keep, and you can actually see where they strategically placed fence posts and trees where the joints should be. And obviously it was there's only three cinemas in the world that can show this, and one's in Seattle, one's in Los Angeles, and one's in Bradford.
And they of all places
and the museum itself is absolutely brilliant. They've got all old projectors there, all old cameras, you can walk around. And I just have to say that if anybody's into the cinema, you need to go on this widescreen weekend. I won't go on too much about it, but Zeb, you really, really need to go and see a Cinerama movie. And they do this every year, and it's just an experience. It's a talk. You know, you've got the big red curtains and the show and the screen
that goes up. I remember red curtains at the cinema.
It's great. So, but I think that's in between celluloid and, like, the cinema now is all digital and it's all... So people are either into films, and I think that old-fashioned cinema, that old-fashioned theatre experience sort of lost us.
Because I often think that if you look at these movies and it's all set kind of in the past, I think, oh, I'd have loved that atmosphere. I'd have loved to have gone and seen that, been involved in that.
Next year, then.
Next year.
But The Way the West Was Won is a particular film that I remember because... I was living in Rhodesia in Africa at the time and came over to England on holiday. And one of my parents' friends worked in marketing and got us front row seats to see how the West was won.
In Cinerama?
In Cinerama. About a day or two after it had been released. It wasn't actually its premiere, but it was a few days afterwards. And I remember being there as a 10 or 11-year-old, and there's this huge wraparound screen, and there's one particular scene where there's an animal stampede.
Oh, the
buffaloes. And you were really underneath your chair because I've not seen much 3D film, but that was incredible because there were just buffaloes coming at you from every single direction.
Very immersive, isn't it?
And I think of all the films from my childhood, that's really the only one which stands out as a film that I remember.
Because it was an experience.
Yeah.
Because it was an experience. Yeah, just because it was an experience.
Yeah.
Anyway, we better get
on. So Sean and I have both seen Bad Times at the El Royale this week. So, Sean, would you like to give us a bit of a summary?
Okay, basically, there's this hotel, which is right on the border of California and Nevada, obviously near Lake Tahoe, which I've actually been to Lake Tahoe, and there is an actual border, like one side's hotels and the other side's casinos. So anyway, but there's this hotel that's built between the two states with a line running through it. And all these, there's a real mixed bunch of characters that turn up at this hotel at certain times. And they're very, very quirky and they've all got certain traits. And this hotel's not really what it seems to be. So there's all sort of, strange rooms and strange goings on. And oh my God, what's happening? And certain things happen in these rooms, and it's a little bit Tarantino-ish because it keeps going back.
So see, that's what I thought.
The person who, the person who checks into room 5, and then you get a flashback, room 5, and it's that person's story, like before they got to the hotel or whatever, or where they'd been.
And it's one of those, it's almost like a puzzle piece sometimes, isn't it? Trying to work out whose past is whose and where it links in and the relation to the hotel. And
Yeah, for sure. I think this film, I really thoroughly enjoyed this film. I did think that there were a couple of moments where it went a little bit flat, which was, there were a few pauses in the film where it seemed to go on a little bit and let's get on a bit more with the story. But I thought the acting was fantastic in this movie. I thought the acting was outstanding.
Quite surprising at times as well, I thought. I wasn't expecting to be at all surprised by this film, and actually I think through the acting I really was.
Sure. And there's some great characters, and I mean even the Grotesque, just like, he's like it's based on, I suppose, like a cross between Charles Manson and Jim Morrison of The Doors, I think you quite like him, don't you, Sharon? Do you like Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah, I don't mind him. I think he's got a well-turned ankle.
You'd probably like him in this
film. That's one way to put it.
You'd probably enjoy him in this film. But there's that scene between, I'm not sure, the scene at the end. I think the ultimate scene, the ultimate play out is so good because Chris Hemsworth and the other people. To me, that is absolutely well-acted, brilliant.
This is quite a hard film to talk about without giving spoilers, isn't it?
We've got we can't really say too much because you totally spoil the movie.
But I think that is a good sign because it's not completely what you expect. And just before I went into the film, I was talking to the ticket guy and he was saying, yeah, I'm going to go see this in a couple of hours because I don't want it spoiled. I've been told that it's like a few other films where the trailer looks like it's one thing, but it only lasts a third of the film and then it all changes. I see where he was coming from with it.
I mean, this was directed by the same director who directed Cabin in the Woods, and I did love Cabin in the Woods. I thought I really enjoyed that movie as well. Have you seen Cabin in the Woods?
I've not seen that one.
Joss Whedon, is it? No.
I'm not sure who the director is. That's just terrible. My short-term memory is really bad lately. I don't know if it's something to do with age or whatever, but my short-term memory, I did have it. So really, I should start making notes. A bit like someone in the movies should have been taking notes. And you probably know who I'm talking about. Because as you get older, you tend to... The memory recall is not as good as it used to be. So,
well, it is in this film. Wow.
Yeah, I guess so. Well... but certain characters, but I mean, yeah, to me, I just thought it was terrifically well acted, and as I say, the last scene I just thought was absolutely you know, the interaction between the...
I felt there was some really beautiful cinematography
definitely
in this one.
Yeah,
really nice aesthetics.
Yeah,
and it was one of those, and even kind of the grimmer parts of it, the way it is shot, it's just fantastic.
Well, for me, I really love that era of like 60s Americana, you know, with the, like, so you've got the art sort of deco hotel with the, and then the cars that roll up are all like, you know, big beastie cars, which I love. Firstly, for me, everybody goes on about, oh, I'll have a Porsche or a Maserati or whatever. Me, I'd have a nice 1963 Cadillac Coupe de Ville convertible or something like that. Big beastie monster. Yeah.
Well, the director is Drew Goddard. Just done a bit of an IMBD check.
Yeah. Well done, Sharon.
Well done, Sharon. Did you see Cabin in the Woods, Sharon?
I did, yes. That had Chris Hemsworth in it as well.
Yeah, it did.
I quite liked it, though. Again, it was one of those films where the trailer told you too much information. So I think if I'd seen it without watching the trailer, I probably would have liked it more. But yeah, I watched that with a group of friends, and I jumped at the most obvious bit where everyone else could see that there was a jump coming a mile away, and I was going, yeah, he's going to be right there, he's going to be right there, oh, and then I just jumped out of my chair, even though I was mentally prepared for it, and my friend never forgave me for that, and
yeah,
she's teased me ever since.
Horror's got to that point where it's like, okay, I know what's going to happen. And then you think, but they know that I know what's going to happen, so is it going to happen? Yeah. And then it does happen, and you're like, oh, no.
I gave a real sort of leap out of the chair, though, and I've never been sort of let to be...
There's nothing better than sitting in a cinema with a friend when there's no other people around watching a horror movie that you can heckle it. I mean, it's just great. I had the most fun ever in a cinema once when it was just me and a friend, and we were watching, I think it was... One of the Women in Black 2 or something like that, and we were like Statler and Waldorf out of the Muppet Show, you know, we were just like really giving it some.
It's good.
Oh no, what's going to happen? No, don't turn around.
But this film was so good with the tension of really that and not knowing where it was going to turn and what was going to happen next, and getting the backstories of the characters was such an interesting thing, but I feel like they almost missed out. I don't know what you thought, Sean, but I think they almost missed out on not telling so much about the young man in the hotel.
Right, yeah, you did. That would have been more interesting as well. That would have been interesting to know a little bit more rather than just the one thing they did show.
Because they touched on it ever so slightly, and then that was it. And I thought, well, no, because he's almost... the figure behind this film.
He was
so interesting, and maybe they thought, well, he's dynamic enough not to need it, but I think it could have really added to his persona if you knew maybe more about where he came from. I don't know, and I think that almost messed up the pace slightly.
I'm not sure the actress who played the singer, what was her name?
But anyway
the actress that played Darlene, and the as I say, the bit between Darlene and Chris Hemsworth, that bit where she says what she says, I just thought, wow, that's terrific.
Yeah.
That was Cynthia Erivo. I don't know if that's how you say her name, but She's on the cast as Cynthia Erivo, who plays
and she
Darlene.
Was she was great. She was great. But that scene when what she says.
There's some really great scenes to look out for. Yeah. And I think Beneath the Surface, although it's a very clever idea in itself, but beneath that, there is so much more going on. And it really kind of, I think, looks at mental states.
Sure.
And kind of the state, not only this young man that is barman and everything else in the hotel.
And waiter and waitress.
And you see his mental state and you understand Darlene's story and the things that happened to her that changed her mindset. And again, with all the other characters and going through it, and you really get this idea of insanity.
That's a brilliant observation.
I think you're right.
I've never thought that deep. That's one thing with Zeb, you can look a bit deep into a movie, but you're exactly right there. You've hit a point. Now I think about it.
And I don't think it's a spoiler because it's in the trailer. So these rooms have spying booths, and it means you almost get a look at the characters themselves. And these rooms almost become their minds, and the things they do in the rooms, and what they say, and the way they act in their rooms, as opposed to outside. So outside in the lobby or car park, it's like this is the front they're putting up. And the second they go back to their hotel room, it's like that's what they're thinking. And that's what's driving them. That's their motivation. And so every time they all come out and interact, you don't know what's going on with them. You haven't got that mindset, the look at what they're seeing. And I think that plays on it really interesting. So it kind of has some surprise chemistry.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It does. It's an interesting movie to watch. I think. Have we influenced you at all?
Well, I thought about it.
Definitely selling it to me.
Brian, so yes. I saw it and I was like, I don't know. So I had the choice between that and First Man, so I chose First Man.
Well, First Man, I really wanted to see that, actually. I sort of had a bit of a busy week, but I really want to... Well, I will see First Man, because for me, I don't know about you, Brian, I was that period of history...
Yeah.
It's just great because
I know
I was
that
on my
moment exactly when I saw the moon landing. Yeah. Where I was.
That's it.
What
it's
I was
nice to recreate
on that Sunday evening.
And it was all as well as the Apollo program. Do they touch on all the all
yes,
the other Apollo missions?
Yeah, the Apollo, the Geminis,
so
and the Apollos. They don't call them Gemini. They call them Gemini or something.
Oh, right.
I thought what a strange pronunciation.
Gemini missions. Yeah, that sounds about right.
So all of these films kind of have that depth. And I felt with Bad Times at the El Royale, there were moments where the pace was messed up because the chemistry seemed to go a bit odd.
Yeah, a couple
And
of
there
places.
Were a few things, and I was just sort of thinking, well, why would you do that? If you this has just happened or you've just found out this, why would you do that?
Yeah.
And so that made it a little bit frustrating, but there was also that really sort of human aspect to it, and you think, well, they clearly all have their faults, they've clearly been through this, and who's to say that we'd actually be rational about it?
So
I don't know, Sean, what would you give it?
Well, do you know, really say that there were a couple of moments where it did go, I think it did go a bit flat, but I would totally give it a solid three.
A solid three,
bordering on a four.
Yeah, I think I'd have to go the same. I'll say 3.5, push it maybe to a 4. Certainly stuff that could have been done.
It's worth a watch, because it's an interesting movie.
And especially if you're someone like me that does like to study it and go in depth and work out what other things mean, there is so much to this film. And, you know, looking at gender roles and age and religion and criminality and all these different aspects that create society, and seeing how it all works and where the flaws are as well, I think.
Because we're all flawed in our own ways, aren't we?
Mm. And there's certainly a nice mix.
And our foibles, except Sharon, of course.
Sharon, you're perfect.
I was going to say, some of us are more flawed than others. And some of them have got off quite lightly, actually.
Lovely bit of positive attitude there from Sharon, and we will leave you on that happy note. So there's four of us in the studio, and it is a
and
good
we've
bye.
Been joined by Toes in online. He's been updating us on his he's been commenting along as we go with him. So hi to Toes, and goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
And goodbye.
Vectis Radio FM 104.6.